From NPR News, I'm Tony Cox. On today's program, as the old adage goes, no good deed shall go unpunished. We'll speak with two African-American women who are being rewarded in a big way this holiday season for making a difference in their communities. Also, correspondent Allison Keyes explores whether low-income housing is really all that affordable for folks who make close to minimum wage. And hey, 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 Fat Albert is back on the big screen. We'll talk with the star of the new movie, Kenan Thompson, a little later. But first, Reporters Roundtable, our look at stories making headlines this week. Violence escalates in Iraq with a deadly bomb blast in Mosul. Nearly two dozen are killed, most of them Americans. But President Bush and Prime Minister Tony Blair insist that next month's elections are still a go. FBI documents reveal new undisclosed abuse of detainees at Guantanamo Bay. The Congressional Black Caucus gears up for a new term with a new chairman at the helm. And you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. You know what time it is. Some Christmas thoughts this Christmas Eve. We've got columnists on the phone from two very different climates. Joseph Perkins with the San Diego Union-Tribune, where the temperature has been hovering around 70 degrees. Joseph, nice to talk to you.
Happy holidays, Tony.
And smack dab in the Midwest, Rochelle Riley with the Detroit Free Press, where the temperature got stuck at about 6 degrees this week. Rochelle, a chilly hello to you.
Hello.
Let's begin with the war in Iraq. Rochelle, as violence continued this week, two new polls showed that for the first time, a majority of Americans are disillusioned about the war. For example, a Washington Post ABC News survey indicated 56% of Americans said the conflict in Iraq was, quote, not worth fighting, given the cost. 57% said they did not care for the way Mr. Bush was managing the war. But listen to this, 53% do approve of how the president has handled terrorism. Now, that's paradoxical, it seems to me. What strikes you about these numbers?
Well, there are two things. One is that the president has finally been successful in separating himself from the Iraqi war, so that people are seeing his battle against the axis of evil as this different thing that he is going to keep Donald Rumsfeld around to take the blame for. When you add that to the CNN USA Today Gallup poll, where 47% of Americans, when asked how the war was going, said that things have gotten worse, shows that Americans are finally realizing just how horrible it is and are resigned to something that they don't like. This attack did not help. As a matter of fact, it's a horrible, horrible thing right before the holidays.
It certainly is. Tony Blair, as I already mentioned, Joseph, went to Baghdad on a surprise visit. He met with Alawi, and he showed support for the troops. But as Rochelle just said, the bombing in Mosul seems really unsettling for the prospects of a smooth election, too, doesn't it?
Well, this is tragic, Tony, but not unexpected. The insurgents, many of whom are remnants of Saddam Hussein's defeated army, are doing all they can to destabilize the country, to disrupt the elections, to discourage candidates from entering the fray, and to intimidate voters. We saw something similar to this in Afghanistan, and we're seeing the same thing in Iraq. So it's unfortunate, but not unexpected.
More bad news. Also, Rochelle, allegations this week that prisoners under U.S. custody in Iraq and Guantanamo Bay suffered some serious physical abuse from their interrogators and FBI agents are describing the abuse in those newly released emails obtained by the American Civil Liberties Union under the Freedom of Information Act. So how is the White House going to handle this additional bad news?
Well, bad news does come in pairs and sometimes in triplicate. And in this case, these FBI memos that have been released are only confirming what many Americans have already known and what the administration has moved to do some things about. They have charged some soldiers, and they treated it as real. But I think once people get a little deeper view of just how bad it was, it's going to look again like we're just doing the wrong thing. And while it may not lead people to believe that John Kerry was saying the right thing about the wrong war at the wrong time, it will lead to some continued, I think, mistrust of just how far we're going to go. And I do want to say a thing about the Iraqi elections. For them to be viewed as this golden moment that once they happen, if they happen in 6 weeks, that everything will work out, I think it's going to be as bad a plan as the exit strategy that we never had from the war in the first place. Because the insurgency is growing, the elections are not going to stop it.
There's more bad news to talk about. The president stood behind his top Pentagon chief, Donald Rumsfeld, never mind the criticism that Rumsfeld has been receiving from Democrats and Republicans, and the revelation that he signed his letters of condolence to the families of soldiers killed in Iraq with the automatic signature machine, and now you have the bombing in Mosul. To what extent, Joseph, is Rumsfeld's star continuing to fade?
Well, whether it was Don Rumsfeld or Colin Powell or George Washington or Dwight David Eisenhower, anyone who was prosecuting this war in Iraq would be subject to criticism. You know, a lot of people, and perhaps the media helps to promulgate this myth, think that war is neat and tidy. It's not. War is uncertain. The unexpected often occurs. But war is like a moving picture. It's ever-changing, and you get to an end result at the end of the day. What we are seeing are snapshots in time, and they're being blown up to be representative of the entire effort. You know, it's interesting that this marks the 60th anniversary of the Battle of the Bulge. That was one of those famous battles during World War II. And I would venture to say, Tony, that if Dwight Eisenhower was held to the same standard that we're holding Don Rumsfeld to today, he would have been, there would have been calls for his resignation. Let's just let this play out. It wasn't going to be a six-month war that would be settled in a tidy fashion. Let's just wait and see what happens in the midterm in Iraq.
I don't want to make this a referendum on Donald Rumsfeld, but what you are suggesting is very contrary to what we've been hearing, isn't it, Rochelle?
Well, that's absolutely true, and quite frankly, this whole idea of a war being neat and tidy was one propagated by the president when he stood on the deck of the USS Lincoln 10 months ago and said, okay, we've won. War is very unpredictable and very ugly, and it's not something that you can go into without understanding that you can't determine when it's going to be over. And I think it doesn't help when you've got a Secretary of Defense that, although he deserves points for going to 36 town meetings with soldiers and giving them the opportunity to talk to him directly, but then he answers their questions by saying, well, you got to go to war with what you got. I think that there is a sense that there's a disconnect between those who are in charge of this war and those who are fighting it.
Let's move on to another subject. Congressman Mel Watt out of North Carolina gearing up for his upcoming role as the new head of the Congressional Black Caucus. Now, I just spoke with him in an interview, and he says that he plans to reach out to the president and invite him to meet regularly with the caucus, something that has not happened during the president's first term. Joseph, you see anything new going between the CBC and the president the second time around?
Well, I'd have to commend Representative Watt for reaching out to the White House. And by the same coin, I think the White House needs to reach out to Representative Watt and the Congressional Black Caucus. Everyone understands that there are going to be differences on policy issues, but the door always ought to be open on both sides. And there are some areas of common ground, I think, that both the White House and the Congressional Black Caucus can find.
The outgoing head of the NAACP, Kwaisi Mfume, met with the president just this week, Rochelle. So is the door opening to African-Americans at the White House more widely?
I think that one of the smartest things that this president has done was to have that discussion with Kwaisi Mfume, which was the first that he'd had with the NAACP, and he waited until he was leaving to do it. But the fact that he did do it and the fact that he's going to work with Mel Watt does say that he plans to show a sense of openness and listening. So it is a big first step.
Let's move on to the fact that this is Christmas Eve. Tomorrow is Christmas. And there's been a great deal of discussion, both Rochelle and Joseph, about saying Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays. And some people are offended by one and offended by the other. What are you finding in terms of your readers with regard to this issue and saying Merry Christmas and whether or not the secularists are taking over? You first, Rochelle.
Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of Kwanzaa celebration in the city of Detroit, which is one of the largest black cities in the country. But what you have, particularly when you're talking about young people, is people wanting to really focus on their traditions. So Jewish folks who don't celebrate Christmas don't necessarily want a Christmas card. And quite frankly, what you do is you wish people the wishes that they want, or you just do something general like Happy Holidays. I send out Happy Holiday cards because I want everybody to enjoy whatever their holiday is, but I don't want us to have a big public debate about how you do it.
What do you say, Joseph? We've been getting some mail even here at NPR from some folks who've been complaining about Kwanzaa, as a matter of fact. What's your take on all of this?
Well, I'm not offended by Happy Holidays, but I think that we have to acknowledge that 85% of Americans, according to a recent Newsweek poll, are Christians. And the holiday that's being celebrated is Christmas. And there are some who, for whatever reasons, they say, well, there should be a strict separation of church and state, object to having Christ in Christmas. Well, I'm not one of them, and neither are the 85% of Americans who consider themselves Christians. And because one celebrates Christmas with Christ in it, doesn't mean that you mean to offend or exclude Jews, Muslims, or even the non-religious in general. But there should not be a tyranny of the minority where they force those of us who are Christians to evict Christ from Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Rochelle, are you finding that this story has any traction at all?
Well, I think when you're talking about a nation that's divided in every way it can find, this is just one more thing that people are looking at to get on opposing battlegrounds. I think Joseph is absolutely right that you cannot keep people from celebrating what is dear to them. This is a Christmas holiday, which means those people who celebrate Christmas should be allowed to not only do that with freedom, but this whole myth of church and state that has existed in this country, we need to get over it. I mean, let's take God off the money, take God off the judges, off the courthouses, and you know, then you can talk about a separation of church and state. But since that's not the country we are, and we are one nation under God, those folks who don't want to celebrate Christmas just don't have to.
You're here.
That's a good way to put it. We appreciate the both of you, of course. Joseph Perkins is a columnist with the San Diego Union Tribune here in sunny Southern California. Rochelle Riley, a columnist with the Detroit Free Press in Chile, Detroit, Michigan.
There are no degrees here, by the way. That's six of a myth. There are no degrees in Detroit.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa to both of you for being with us this week on Reporters Roundtable.
Thank you.